Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Uh-huh.
Yo, Louis.
Y'all ready?
Just musically
Yo,
speaking.
Yo, Pedro. What's good?
I'll let the music talk to ya, like Lou and P. Pedro got that vision so your mind can see. Louis got them ideas, let them out be free. We got the whole industry speaking musically. Season 2, every episode is popping with facts. You can get behind the scenes of the acts and tracks. All the drama in between, work it out and relax. Talk about the real shit and the wax on tracks.
So turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats.
It's musically speaking,
Pedro, Louis and me.
Turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats.
It's musically speaking,
Pedro, Louis and me. Let's get it. Let's go. Start the show.
Yeah.
That's how I bless y'all.
Welcome to another episode of Musically Speaking, the podcast. My name is Louis. Wanted to share with you a previously recorded episode. We recorded sometime around late February while Pedro was here in Florida. We had an opportunity to interview the renowned producers, DJs, and just two great guys, the Santana Twins. In this episode, we talk about DJing, the art of DJing, what's been lost, what's been gained, and getting their perspective on the craft. So let's get right into it. Yep, yep. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Musically Speaking, the podcast. My name is Louis.
And my name is Pedro.
And we got two very special guests in the building.
Yeah, two for the price of one.
True.
These are good friends of mine, good friends of yours, Louis. And these are folks that are, I gotta say, this is gonna be a no holds barred kind of interview. We're gonna let them talk freely because I think that's the only way they can talk.
Just official listener discretion is advised.
Yes, we're gonna you know, any feelings hurt while listening to this
not
podcast,
our responsibility. I just want to say that
we're not responsible. However, no. Please like, subscribe, and keep enjoying the podcast. Even if your feelings are hurt, we'll apologize at the next time. Don't worry about it. Our guests, the Santana Twins, Ernesto and Louis. What's up, guys?
What's up, guys?
How's everything in New York? Is it cold?
It's getting springy though. We haven't had a winter like we usually get. Apparently there's a cold front that's just stuck up in the north that had to come down. So New York, the Northeast hasn't got as
We haven't got too much snow like we normally get.
Yeah.
It's winter over here. It's a balmy 60 degrees, so it's, you know.
Yeah, you guys out there are crying with 60 degrees. We're praying for 60 degrees.
I'm crying. I came out here for 85, 90. I was hoping I'd be in shorts and t-shirts. I'm wearing a hoodie out here. I'm not happy.
Yeah, you get over it.
Yeah, I will get over it. But, you know, we wanted to focus this interview because you guys have spoken many times, multiple interviews, but there was something that I found very interesting about you all is you have a history of being a DJ. And when folks were listening to you talking about your thoughts on DJs today, many people felt like you were just, you know, yeah, these guys, what do they know? They're producers. They're getting involved. They don't know what they're talking about. But There's some backstory to that. You know what you're talking about. And I want you to start from the beginning with your history and then start giving us your thoughts about what's going on with DJs today, man.
Yeah. We, like, you know, any young inspired DJs start out in the beginning when they're 13, 14 years old, listening to music, you know, their older siblings playing. You know, we were fortunate enough to live in New York City, where at that time we had KTU, Latin Rascals, Aldo Marin, all these great DJs. So, you know, break dancing. So it was impossible at that age not to be inspired and influenced by these guys. You know, so that was high school years, but
we had equipment, but it wasn't professional equipment. We have Fisher turntables.
Yeah, Fisher turntables, belt-driven turntables.
Belt-driven. So, you know, we go back to, you know, having to, you know, buy new bands for it, and we always had to put a little bit of oil on the motor.
We had a Numark mixer.
Yeah,
we had a Fisher amp. Yeah, it was like a home component from a friend of ours that he used to work for the factory, so he gave us a good price. You know, like the backdoor special.
Right.
And whenever that amp went out, you know, we had to, you know, those were the days of fuses, so you had to open up the thing and put a new fuse in, and you blew it.
And we had a little fan that we put on top of it to keep it cool, because as we were pushing it, you had to keep it cool so it doesn't blow.
Yeah.
So we graduated high school and we moved on to college. No, but before that, we bought our first drum machine at 16.
Oh, yeah.
We had a drum machine.
Yeah, we had a drum machine. So we were bitten by the DJ bug and also the need or the desire to experiment, because the stuff that we were hearing the Latin Rascals do and Aldo, you know, that was like studio stuff. And we were like amazed at, man, how did they get that break going so long? And, you know, it was amazing to us.
But a lot of people don't know either. We used to break dance.
Yeah.
And when we were break dancing.
Hold on a second. This I did not know. And I know your physiques. So my guess is that you were not as full-figured as you are right now to be doing that breakdancing, correct?
We were small little dudes who used to weigh like 115 pounds wet.
Yeah, we were small. We were small dudes, man. And since we were twins, we used to breakdance. But what people really, a lot of people don't know is our breakdance crew used to be called Freestyle Fresh Kids. And you will never guess who our DJ was.
I'm not going to know. You know who it is?
Jelly Bean Benitez.
No, Omar Santana.
Oh, get out of here.
Listen, I'm going to tell you the story. So we used to practice in a building two blocks away, my boy Marlon Flores, Albi Nieves, you know, from the editor from back in the days, you know, it was they were called Blade Runners. Not the Blade Runners, Blade Runners. It was two separate because it was two different Blade Runners. And my boy went to the Wiz on Jamaica Avenue, and he went upstairs and he heard a mixtape from a dude and who worked at the Wiz, and he said, "Yo, man, we have a breakdance crew. Do you want to be down?" He said, "Yeah, I'll be your DJ." My man was Omar Santana. This dude was deadly on the 12s. We had the dopest mixtapes, edits and stuff.
It was nice,
man. Omar was nasty. And yo, and we had the only breakdance tapes and cassettes to break. And then
I wish there was
Omar wasn't this. Editing at that point yet, because Omar was like 17. But yo, he was deadly. Yeah, he was deadly. So Marlon introduced Omar to Albi Nieves, and Albi took him to the studio, and he's the one that put the razor blade in his hand. Yeah, so so we had it. We live in Queens, and a lot of the editors, like, it's crazy because that DJ culture back then, there was battles, and you know, it was battles with freestyle music and dance music. It wasn't like hip hop DJs battling. You had to have like three or four turntables, a crew, and they would compete, and you had to do like live at the edit block live.
Yeah, and back in those days, the big crews were like these Filipino groups that they had like four or five guys, and they would line up their 1200, and it was the stuff that these guys did live.
Yeah.
You know, with turntables and a mixer was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, we were blessed to grow up in an era like that, because we actually saw it firsthand, and that also inspired us to be like, yeah, we want to definitely do some mega mixing like that.
Yeah, and we did. We got to the point.
We got to that level.
But we got to the point where me and my brother, we would do four turntables, and we had the drum machine. We had the Casio RZ-1, both of my boy Joey. But it was like a thing. If you were a DJ in Queens, you had to edit. You know, Carlos Berrios, Chip Chop, all these guys. A lot of
Moncato,
Joe Barion, the Blade Runners. All these guys are from Queens. Prince Quick Mix.
Yeah.
A lot of you had to edit. You had to edit and you had to be a real DJ.
Yeah. Well, we were fortunate enough to live in Queens and we had easy access to a lot of guys that had equipment. That was like the thing to do, at least in our area or within our, you know, immediate area. I mean, we were a rock throw away from a DJ or a semi-producer, you know, working his way up the chops, and you know, we were definitely fortunate.
Yeah.
But when we got to college, I went to Buffalo and my brother went to Binghamton. And that's where we kind of started honing in on our skills. And I remember my first college check loan, I ran during a break to Chinatown to Uncle Steve's, I think that's the name of the store.
Yeah.
And I bought my first 1200s. And it was the 1200s with the Japanese connection. So it's like, if you didn't have the adapter or you lost it, you were shit out of luck because you weren't going to be able to plug it in here. So it was like a bootleg one. But I remember, I think I paid like $325 each. So it was like $700. Had to buy some needles. And I think I bought a bullshit Numark mixer. And it was history from there, man. I used to live, sleep, and eat. When I wasn't studying, I was DJing.
Yeah. And in my situation, I was the dancer, because a lot of people don't realize we used to dance for freestyle acts. A freestyle act that was coming out with Al Pizarro. That was when, yo, it was like 87. When freestyle has just like started taking off, yeah. Al Pizarro had an artist. Her name was Sandy. Sandra. It was Sandy, and our first performance was at 10:18, like 3,000 people, and people were bugging because they were like, "Yo, those guys look exactly the same and they're dancing." And we were skinny, man. Yo, it wasn't like two fat dudes on stage. We were skinny and we used to do some crazy dancing. And people were like, what the hell? I remember Roma Ricardo was DJing and we went on. She was like the opening act. Everybody was like, well, how the hell do you follow that? And I remember because we used to do a lot of crazy routines. So my brother had a white shirt. I had a black shirt. My brother had white pants. So it was opposite. So a lot of the moves that we would do, people were like, what the hell? It was like, it was some crazy shit.
Yeah.
But since we were from New York City. I actually hung out with the juniors and seniors because I was like that cocky kid, you know, like, yo, I could DJ. Like, I'm not, you know, like, I know how to play. And they were like, yo, who the hell is this kid coming from New York? He's a youngster and he's trying to take over. But I hooked up with the biggest DJ crew. But even then, they were just DJing on campus. And I said, forget that. I'm going off campus because I don't want my parties to finish at 12 o'clock. Yo, and I went into this club. It was crazy because I went to the club. There was a dude hanging lights in the new club that was opening up. And there was DJs coming in and out. And the DJs were giving the tapes. I didn't even go. I was so cocky. I went in there without a cassette. And I'm looking at the dude. And I start talking to the dude about the wiring. He's like, you know how to wire? I'm like, do I know how to wire? I said, yo, man, I'm from New York, man. We do everything. I'm here with this dude, and I see like DJs coming in, talking to the managers, dropping off cassettes because it was a big club. Yo, so we finished wiring some lights, right? The dude I was helping, he was Dominican. He was the owner. Yo, he's like, yo, you got the job. I'm like, you haven't heard me play. He's like, I already know you're official, and I got the job. Yo, it was. That club was always packed, and the seniors and the juniors, they were like, how the hell did Lou pull that off? I'm like, yo, because you guys got to believe.
You got to know electricity.
Yo, listen, we always, anything that we do, we always confident what we do because we put 120%, 200%, 2,000% into whatever endeavor we're doing to make sure that we're always, if not the best, we are considered top, you know, amongst the best. Because why bother doing something if you're not going to go, all in?
That makes a lot of sense. Here's what I find interesting. Lewis is doing something in one college, and this was in another college. Did you ever guys get together, I mean, during like breaks, and compare notes or try to one-up each other and be like, yo, I was at this club DJing. I don't know what you were doing, but...
No, but this is the funny shit. Like, because around that... Remember, we still had the production bug. Because, you know, like, it's natural progression. When you DJ so many years and you listen to all these records, you eventually get ideas and you want to make your own track.
Yeah, you listen to a song, you'd be like, you know what? If I had produced that track, I would have done this instead of that.
Right.
You know, what they did. Or maybe if they would have tried this. And then you get the urge to see if you can actually develop that idea or do a remix of, you know, back in the days when they had acapellas on vinyl, you would get a simple drum machine or something and make your own beat and throw the acapella out.
Yeah, and we had the drum machine, so we were playing the drum machine and we would throw acapellas on top of it. So when mixing, I would start the drum machine, mix it in. The drum machine's coming in on line two, and then we would just mix an acapella on top of it. So we were always taking like new drums, and you could sample on that drum machine. So I have four pads, and it was like milliseconds. But you know, if you spread up the record, you got more into it, into the sampler. That's how they used to do on the SP, and we were able to start cultivating and learning our craft.
And we can make our own dubs.
Yeah. And that's when we started renting the M1, the M1 keyboard. So we were always, we were excelling in DJing. And then,
yeah, we were very curious. And our curiosity led to us trying to whether it was DJing, how did, you know, they blend these two records together? You know, how did they produce this? How did they do this dub? You know, we were always looking, you know, for ways to increase our skill level. As far as doing tapes, as far as doing, you know, little bullshit demos and stuff.
And even then, the mixes, like when we used to do the mixes, what we were doing back then, which would a lot of the right DJs do, is they mix in key. Now, we didn't really know what keys were.
We just knew sound.
The record sounded right, mixing. So not every record could mix with another record. But we didn't know exactly why not. We just knew.
One record sounded good with another record.
Right.
And that was because of the key.
Yeah, that's, you know, mixed. When you find out a year later, oh, that's mixing in key. We didn't know. Because we used to just put tempos on the record. We didn't put the key. Yeah. So that's why, like, you know, the Serato and all that stuff, it tells the guys what the keys are so that they can mix and key. But a lot of these DJs still to this day don't understand the concept. So a producer will do it. A producer will do it by ear. And a DJ who's learned his craft will understand and do it because he knows that those records go better together.
By feel.
By they feeling it. And what we did, it, we were doing it because we were already in the production mode where we're like, yeah, nah, these two keys are compatible by hearing it. We already knew, like, yeah, this goes smooth. It made the transitions go smoother. Like, if you listen to some DJs when they play, and you're like, yo, there's no train tracks there. The percussion is on point, but the record is not mixing well. It's because they're mixing two songs that don't have complements. They're like, what the?
No, I get it. But let me ask you this. So obviously DJing has changed, right? So I don't think we find a lot of folks who are DJing vinyl anymore, or at least those original DJs. I mean, that's a skill set, right? Just DJing in vinyl compared to DJing digitally now. I mean, do you think we've lost anything between that transition?
Well, I have nothing against vinyl DJs because that's where we started. And I have absolutely nothing against digital DJs because that's technology. If you're an old school cat and you fail to go with the times, you're going to get left back. And even more so because they don't release vinyl records of new songs. So that means you're stuck in the year 1980, you know, to
2003.
Yeah, around there. So that means you're not playing. You're not gonna play a hot new song because it's not on vinyl. That's ridiculous. So I think the balance between the both. You know, I'll never put down the DJ. You know, that spins only on Serato or Pioneers because that's technology.
And believe me, I don't mind not carrying 11 crates.
Oh shit.
That is very true.
Yeah, now you with a thumb drive, you could do a 5-hour set with two thumb drives.
Yeah, I mean, everything you did on vinyl, you can do and then some on digital. So I can't see why a DJ would not want to progress into digital, even if he still loves his vinyl. You know, it's to his benefit if he wants to increase and improve his craft. Right. It's to his benefit to move on to the digital, not forget the vinyl, you know, because obviously some records, you know, they sound really good on vinyl, and some of those copies are hard to get in digital format. Like some of the B cuts, the dub cuts, you're not gonna get them, you know, on Spotify and iTunes because all they're throwing up is the radio mix.
Right, but also the difference in I think the older DJs understood the craft and they respected it. Not that the new guys don't, but since you had to practice because there was no sync button. I don't care about the sync button either. I'm cool with you using a sync button as long because the sync button still is not going to give you the right, you know, mix or when to come in on the right part of the record. But I think the older cats, they understood and they appreciated the art and respected it where
they took the time and they spent hours practicing.
Yeah, I think nowadays
the guys you buy a controller and you call yourself a DJ.
Yeah.
Without even knowing. And you know, and then the problem is you got a big following. The consumer, the average fan, doesn't really know like what a good blend is. They might hear it, but they don't really comprehend what the actual DJ is doing. And some of the DJs out there just don't respect the craft, where they're just cutting the thing open one bar, or they're
using effects.
Yeah, using effects to hide the transitions that they don't know. And also, you know, they don't care. Some of them, and it sounds like a dryer with a bunch of shoes in it. So it's like when we hear that, you know, my brother and I have stayed quiet for a very long time, but we respect the craft. We have that. We have a mix show called The Ride at Five. We're the only guys. We're on 34 websites. We do a half hour show. We give 20 minutes of that 30 minutes to our guests. Because we respect the craft. We respect the DJs. Yeah. And we want to give them more
shine.
My brother and I, you guys know us. My brother and I are low-key dudes. You know, we don't care about the limelight, nothing like that. But we do respect the art. And you can't fake the funk in front of us, because we're going to call you out on it.
Yeah.
Because I know the years that me and my brother spent learning the craft, and I respected the other DJs. And I think it's not that it's a lost art form, but it should be a respected art form.
Yeah, I think one of the disadvantages of digital DJing compared to analog vinyl DJing is back where the DJ used to have to take an extra 20 seconds, you know, to get beat matching and figure out when he's going to throw the record in. Nowadays, you hit one button and you're beat matched, and you hit a cue, you know, set up, and now you're set up to when you're going to throw it.
Right. Yeah.
So those extra 15 or 20 seconds are free to do whatever you want. You can get on the mic and start, you know,
babbling away.
You can, you know, start, you know, shook, jabbing, dancing, you know, for the cameras. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Right.
I'm just saying is, you know,
you know what? You can do whatever you want. Yeah. As long as your transitions are cool, I'm not going to call you out on it.
Yeah.
Not going to call you
out. And we understand. I mean, we went to a party yesterday and the DJ was on point with getting the crowd motivated. You know, right. He was on the mic, you know, let's go. Yeah. You know, maybe a little bit too much for our liking, but the crowd was loving it.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were, you know, he knew how to work the room. I 100%.
Yeah, we give him the credit on that. But the thing is, your technique has to be flawless, man. When you're on that level, when you're on that stage like that, you got to be flawless, because there's going to be those two dudes in the corner listening and looking at each other going, did you hear that transition?
Yeah.
So we don't give no pass to anybody.
Yeah.
If you're on a platform, if you're DJing at a club like that, big, you're fair game.
Yeah, and this is the thing. We come from the era where we were spoiled, because we were in clubs when Little Louis Vega, Carlos Berrios,
Roma Ricardo, Scott Blackwell, you name it, the Blade Runner,
Juan Cato. I don't think I was ever in a club where I heard a train wreck in a mix, because these guys, you know, and you never even heard their voices.
Nope.
You know, they were just straight up dead set, you know, concentrating on mixing the next record.
Right.
And the crowd was loving it. You know, I guess it was a different way of hyping the crowd. I mean, they hyped the crowd with playing the right music at the right time in the right way.
But first of all, you didn't even know what the hell the DJ was. You would have to look around. He was up, you know, Roseland, the DJ was all the way on top. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think that the DJ now wants to be the artist or the star of the show over the music?
Yeah, that's another thing. The DJ should never feel that he has to be bigger than the music. I believe the music should always be the main focus, and you're there just to augment or, you know, be the director of the music. You know what I'm saying? It's like a conductor on a symphony. He's not talking while he's conducing the orchestra.
tuba. He doesn't say, you go, violin boy, you go. You go, yo, yo, tuba, chill, chill. I want all my people playing the drums, stand up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yo, you play the music, you conduct, you're the conductor. Yo, that's what you're there for. You know what I'm saying?
This is the thing. If you took two DJs, let's say one from 1980, let's say 1987, and he took a DJ from the year 2020, and you put them in a room where they couldn't see the crowd, had no visual of the crowd, I would put my money on the vinyl DJ only because that's kind of how they used to DJ back in the days. You were in a little spare bedroom in a house party. People didn't see you, but you were rocking the crowd because you took extra effort into making sure you played the right song at the right time and in the right way. You know, as compared to a new cat on the stage, you know, his way of amping the crowd is, you know, getting on the mic and saying, go, go, throw your hands up, throw your hands up. All my single ladies, throw your hands up. And I'm like, you know, half the ladies are lying. Their man is watching the kid at home. So they lying. So, yeah. So, you know, if another thing is, you know, I would love to, you know, see a new DJ, you know, that's working on Serato or Pioneers, not looking at his computer screen when he's mixing. Like, if I close his laptop, would he still be able to mix? Because they're so used to looking at the waves to make sure that they're matching up, that they're mixing with their eyes instead of their ears.
Right.
Whereas an old school DJ is using nothing but his ears. And at times, he's probably even closing his eyes. And he's just listening to the music, and he's more in tune with what's going on, as compared to, you know, God forbid, you know, one of these DJs has a computer crash. Party's over. Party's over. You might as well throw on that freaking CD, that mix CD that you're probably playing anyway.
Right. And this is the thing. And there's some violators out there. When you have a lot of time to talk, I have to be suspicious of whether or not you're playing a pre-recorded mix. Because you can't tell that on Serato, or you could have the third channel just playing the mix, and then you're faking the funk on the crossfaders. You know what I'm saying? I have to look at what you're doing, the mixer, and to see the levels. And even then, there's a way, because yo, my brother and I are key on technology, man. We're equipment heads. You can't do a mix, and I can't tell whether or not you're mixing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's say like Serato, they have four. You can play four records at the same time. That third track is going the whole night. You already pre-recorded this shit, and you just faking the funk because you did the mix while someone else did it for you.
Yeah, and you're touching knob.
EDM
DJs are infamous.
You know,
for that.
You're touching the headphone knob. You're touching the, you know, you making like you're touching the EQ knob, but you're not. You know, it's like. That all came from when we used to touch the crossover. We used to cross over to cut off the highs and bring up the you know, to just as an effect type thing, Richard Long crossover and stuff like that. So the DJs now, we're not mad at the technology, man. We appreciate it as long as you put the music first.
Yeah, if anything, we're disappointed that they're not elevating the level of mixes that are available to them. Because, I mean, what you can do now with technology, it's very similar to editing. Back in the days, you know, to do a master mix edit like what Carlos Berrios and Omar did, it used to take them hours, if not days, to do, you know, a nice mix.
Yeah, we used to do
the same thing.
We used to do it on cassettes.
Yeah.
With the pause button, but you know, it took time. You know?
Nowadays, you can do that stuff faster. In, you know, 6 or 7 hours.
Hey, listen, it's funny because. We're good friends with Carlos. We're good friends with Albert. Albert, he's like, Louis, I'm not spending my time. No more tape for me. Digital. Carlos is like, nah, I'm doing tape. So it's crazy how you know the technology's there. It's gonna make it easier, but then you want to
still gravitate towards
the analog because you
feel comfortable.
You feel comfortable, yeah. and you know how to work it. You know, obviously Albert knows how to edit on tape, but he's what we call a realist. He's like, yo, it takes me a day to do it back in the day like this. I can do this in 2 hours. So
it's a time issue for some people. Some people like that. The same thing with DJing. Some DJs, yo, my mix gotta be perfect when I'm playing at the club. I gotta practice my transitions, know my records. And we tell people, Austin Button back in the day was riding the tempo of the record on the label.
On the label, yeah.
And our cue points was having two or three copies. Because how do you go? I mean, if you guys are familiar with our style of mixing, my brother and I always go from the first verse to the second hook. We cut out the first hook and the second verse because we're not going to play the whole song. We want to go from the first verse. No one ever mixes a song from the third verse or the second verse. You always play the first verse.
And it's the break.
And the break. So what we do is, back in the day, we would have the two copies. You have it ready so that when the hook is coming in, you're throwing in the second on the second turntable. You're throwing in the second hook.
Yeah.
And now right after that, you got your break. So we didn't have to play the whole record.
Yeah, and you don't want to play the whole record. The whole purpose of not playing the whole record is that you're encouraging the fans that love the music to go out and actually buy
the record.
What's the purpose of a fan that gets a free download of a mix
and he's got the whole version?
There's no incentive. You know, you might as well just, you know, look online and you could find every freaking song you want because DJs today, they'll put the whole record, you know, on any Ride at 5 mix that we've done, unless it was our song. That's the only song, and even then, we don't play the whole version. But anybody else's song that they submitted or, you know, we bought a copy of or, you know, somebody sent it to us, we'll always play only one verse, one chorus into the break, and that's it. Yeah. Why? Because you got enough music in there for a fan that likes the music. If they hear it, they're going to, you know what? I'm more interested. I want to hear what the second verse sounds like. I want to hear the whole record. Let me get on iTunes.
And we're getting more records in.
Yeah.
On a 10 minute set, me and my brother are getting 5-6 records in, as opposed to most dudes are only getting two.
Yeah. So they let the whole record.
They're playing to the break. You're playing from the intro, the first verse, second verse, and a hook. You're already 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes into the record by the time you get to the break. So in 10 minutes, what are you gonna do? You only play two records,
yeah.
And we already did play five.
Well, let me ask you something. So obviously, folks like us who are in the music, right, who are making music, creating it, we kind of have this curse, right? We can't walk into a club and just enjoy the music. We're dissecting it. We're listening to drums. We're listening to kicks and snares and mixes. And do you ever kind of regret that, that you kind of have that ear where you can't just go in and just blankly just enjoy a record, but you're analyzing it?
All the time. There's My pet peeve is karaoke.
How are you gonna hate on karaoke? You know,
my wife is a Filipina, so you know in the Philippines karaoke is like a huge thing. I mean, there's a karaoke bar on every other corner. Every little bodega over there has a karaoke machine. People got karaoke set up in their house, and I cringe when I hear all these people singing off key, off beat, or whatever. But you know what? They're enjoying themselves. And that's like the curse of being a producer. Like you overanalyze everything. You can't go to a club and be like, oh, they should have done this with the record, or yo, that kick sounds nice. And man, you know, we did that the other day. We went to go see who was performing?
Where was it?
Oh, Chrissy. The first time Chrissy Aisi was getting back into the scene, and we went to go see Frank C mix, and the records that he was playing, I'm sitting there and that kick is just hitting us hard in the chest, and we're like, damn, you see, that's what you call a good sound that they had back in the day. I mean, it was perfect blend of kick, you know, sound. I mean, it just hit you right in the chest,
right.
You know, and it's hard to get that nowadays. So it's like, as soon as you walk into a club or a bar or whatever, you know, your producer is, you're automatically analyzing everything.
It's a little messed up now because you kind of filter the noise. Like, get your hands up, ladies. This shit is crazy. I'm like, yo, let the record play and shut the fuck up. But, I mean,
yeah.
to make serious point of it, we
you know, we are advocates, and some DJs might be like, yo, you know, the twins are talking shit. You know, they're just, but nah. Well, I think we're authorized, or we know what we're talking about, and
we speak from experience.
We speak from experience, so we don't want people to think that we just, you know, talking out of the other end. You know what I'm saying?
No, it makes perfect sense, and I think that this leads to what I wanted to ask you all, because you already talked a lot about this, but what should an aspiring DJ who is always listening to these people barking on the microphone, what can they do to stand out? And you already mentioned some of this. What advice do you give a DJ or an aspiring DJ or someone who's DJing who probably heard some of this and is like, damn, that's me. What can they do to be better?
Concentrate on the music, and the fans will reward you, because if you got a reputation for being a really good mixer or DJ and you know what to play, five people are going to listen to you today. Next week, 10 people. Next, the week after that, 20 people. And it's going to snowball. But because you're concentrating more on the music and what you play than worried about, you know, shout outs and, you know, shares and stuff like that, you know, let the fans, you know, vindicate your hard work by them telling, yo, you know, Cliff Potts is spinning. My man goes crazy with the three turntables. You know, it's a pleasure to see DJs like that spin, because, you know, they're concentrate, and Cliff Potts still gets on the mic. But, you know, my man is running three turntables and he's still spinning. You know what I'm saying? He'll get on there and say, yo, what's up? You know, he acknowledges the fans that are coming in to hear, but he's not forgetting about the craft.
We're not telling anybody how they should be, their own style, their own personality. But above all, the music should come first.
Yeah.
I can to give you an analogy, when I get in a cab, I want that dude to drive me to where I'm going safe. I don't want the cab driver to be like, oh, yo, look over here. Oh, you're looking over there. Look over there. Look over there. Yo. You're going to worry like, yo, dude, just get me there safe. Drive the damn cab. It's the same thing with the music. I want the DJ to direct me to my happy time. I'm there for 2-3 hours. I'm there to talk to my friends, enjoy the dancing. It's hard to do it when you got someone yelling over the music, especially when you violate and you talk over the lyrics. What the hell?
Speak the truth, brother. Speak the truth.
And not just the one thing that they do, which I don't like, because I like when the beats come in and you got the breaks. They speak over the breaks, man. Let that edit run through. They think that just because they're not singing that they have the permission to do that.
Yeah, it's a very tight balancing act with the fact that they feel that they need to, you know, be more engaged, you know, on the mic than they actually, you know, should be. So it's like you got it, with that mentality, you got to speak somewhere. If you're going to speak, I prefer that you speak in the break than you speak over the person singing, because then that's downright disrespectful. Because at that point, you're saying that what you have to say and that shout out that you have to say is more important than the music or the artist that's singing, because you prefer that the fans listen to you shout out
right
somebody, you know, name
to,
or,
yeah,
or
because to us it becomes more of an ego thing. Yeah. You're there because you want acknowledgement from the people that you should be the spotlight, and all you're doing is playing music that other people produced.
Yeah,
you should never be, as a DJ, you should never be above the music, because the people will go to hear you play, not to hear you talk. Yeah. You're not a talk Jay. You're a DJ.
Well, thank you for tuning into that episode. Hope it was fun for you as it was for us. Please make sure to subscribe, to like, to comment, to leave us a review, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to Musically Speaking with your hosts, Lewis and Pedro. Be sure to visit musicallyspeakingpodcast.com for show notes, past episodes, and our blog. Please subscribe, like, or share with a friend. Till next time.